Welcome to the Big World Made Small podcast for the adventure traveler. I'm thrilled you're here. My name is Jason Elkins, and in addition to being your host, I'm also a former U.S. Army paratrooper, third-generation commercial hot air balloon pilot, paramotor pilot, ex-Montana fly fishing guide, advanced open water scuba diver, and a full-time nomad that's visited more than 30 countries on six continents. As a seasoned adventure travel expert with a passion for creating and sharing meaningful experiences, I'm on a quest to impact the lives of adventure travelers, tour operators they rely on, and the communities that host them. Every week, I bring you exclusive interviews with fascinating adventure tourism experts who have agreed to share their personal stories, favorite destinations, and some invaluable travel insights they've picked up along the way. We'll enjoy a casual conversation, create some connections, and likely share some laughs. It's my hope that by the end of each episode, this big world will feel just a bit smaller. Let's get started, shall we? Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Big World Made Small Adventure Travel Podcast. I'm super excited today because I have a fellow podcaster that's been doing this quite a bit longer than I have and has some interesting travel stories, but also some insights into sharing those stories and how you go about that. So today we have Kit Parks. She is the podcast host of the Active Travel Adventures podcast, as well as the Adventure Travel Show podcast. So Kit, so happy to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here, Jason. Thanks for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. I spoke with you, I believe it was last week, and you were just so kind to give me some insights and suggestions on this show. So I want to acknowledge you for that right off the bat. And definitely want to learn about your podcast, but mostly want to learn about you because I think you've got an interesting story. So Kit, share with us, what got you into this? What's your story? Were you traveling from a young age, or what happened?
I did travel at a young age when my father worked for Pan Am. So we did some international travel then. And then I thought travel was something that you did when you retired. I was a workaholic. All I did was work from the time, actually as a teenager until now, I never seemed to stop. And I did not get back into travel until around 2008 when my late husband and I had a plant nursery. We were no longer anchored to the farm because every time we'd try to go anywhere, plants would die. It was very expensive. And we just got the bug. It was time. We had the time. We had saved up the money to start doing things. But I still didn't even know something like adventure travel even existed. That was a few years later after I had discovered hiking and backpacking, oddly enough, through a book on the history of the Appalachian Trail that just started me down this rabbit hole of that it's not such a bad thing to get dirty and sweaty, and that sometimes to see the really pretty places in the world, that's the only way you can get there. And I met a gentleman when I was trying to learn how to do the Appalachian Trail, who was every year doing these really exciting trips that I thought were for special athletes or special people. I didn't think somebody normal like me could do that. And about 6 years after I met him, I said, where are you going next year? He said, oh, we're going to Nicaragua. Why don't you come? And I was like, what? Me? How could I go backpacking to Nicaragua? And I said yes, because he said he thought I was strong enough to do it. And that was a life-changing event, Jason. I mean, I totally changed my life.
I'm curious, did you meet him on the Appalachian Trail, or how'd you make that connection?
So I was trying to learn everything I could, because to me, the woods were this big, dark, scary place that you safely saw from the seat of your car. You didn't go in the woods. And so I read every book I could find, and I'd seen that this guy, Warren Doyle, had done the Appalachian Trail more than anybody in the world. And he had an institute, the Appalachian Trail Institute, that had a class the next month. For 5 days, he would teach you how to through hike, even though I only wanted to section hike. I figured the more knowledge, the better. And that's where I met John.
Okay. That is very cool. And so tell us about your journey on the Appalachian Trail. Did that come through to fruition, or did you get distracted by Nicaragua, or what happened?
No, because Nicaragua was like six years later. Yeah. So this was 2011. I went to the school. I had planned to do a 2-week section hike that next summer, which I did. So I went from Damascus down to Hot Springs. And which Warren Doyle had told us all the prettiest parts of the AT. So that's what I've been trying to do over the years, just doing day hikes or backpacking trips to see the best of the AT, because I'm not willing to give up 5 months of my life to do the whole thing. I don't have that desire. And after 2 weeks, I really would like comfort again, is what I've learned about myself. And again, that backpacking trip was life-changing as well, because I had just finished remodeling my dream house. It had everything I ever wanted in a house and yard. And over that 2 weeks, I was like, everything I need's on my back. And why am I slave to my house? And so that it just reframed my whole life and what was important to me. So everything was just leading me down this whole change of mindset.
So what I hear is, had you never been camping at all before you started this?
Girl Scouts.
I know there's a lot of definitions.
Yeah. Yeah. Girl Scouts, one night in a cabin when I was probably 12. And then a weekend in Boone, North Carolina with my sister when I was probably 10. And that was it.
Okay. Very, very cool. And so when somebody, there's a few things you mentioned there that really, I think, are super interesting about learning how to do it. Right. So you're like, I was trying to learn. I was reading books. I went and did this course because it was a big change. If you've never done that type of thing, it probably felt fairly overwhelming, right?
Yes. I can gratefully thank a gentleman by the name of Casey, who I was like, surely I was living in the Raleigh, North Carolina area at the time. And I was like, surely there must be hiking clubs or something that I can learn how to hike, because I just had never done it before. And So that's when I discovered Meetup, which was another life-changing thing, because being a work-at-home person without children, it's really hard to meet people in a new area. And so I showed up to the hike, and Casey didn't laugh at me when I told him I wanted to learn how to hike and I wanted to section hike. And he kind of took me under his wing and was very helpful and giving me encouragement. And then I also, they had a backpack conditioning meetup, and I signed up for that. I didn't even know what a backpack was, Jason. They said, bring a backpack with like 10 pounds of weight in it. I didn't have a backpack. I went next door to the high school kid. I said, I need to borrow your book bag. And I just put books in the book bag and brought that. And so Sherry, who is the leader of that, quietly rolled her eyes when I showed up. But she and I are now very, very close. But she could see that I was serious. But it's amusing. But I'm totally clueless, beyond clueless.
You were really putting yourself out there, right, is what I hear, is just kind of like, okay, I don't care if people laugh at me. I don't care. I'm going to do this. I'm just going to do this. And I suspect that you have characteristics, the kind of personality characteristics like that from prior to. So let's go back to before you got into this in your career. You said you worked all the time. You're a workaholic. In hindsight, are you able to look back and see, oh yeah, I had these skills that I acquired from my previous life that I was able to kind of parlay into what you're doing now?
I would say, just thinking the way you phrased that question, I would say two things come to mind. I've been selling something all my life. So I'm used to rejection. I have very thick skin. And I've also started lots of small businesses, many of which failed. So I'm used to failure. I found that it's not the worst thing in the world. And I generally learn something even in the biggest catastrophe, so that I'm not afraid to fail. I think that's my superpower.
I thought you might say something like that. That's kind of what I was sensing. That's why I was curious what you were doing before. And not everybody has that as their superpower. And I'm sure there's some people listening to this that might not identify with that. And I'm curious, what would you tell them if they're listening to this, they're interested, right, in doing it. So what do you think most people, what's the barrier? What's getting in the way that you can help people get across right now?
First of all, they probably have the same mindset that I did, that it's for special people, for extraordinary people. I'm about as ordinary as you can get. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. And that's the whole reason I did my show.
Right. And I'm curious, what do you mean by special people? What does that mean to you?
Athletes or endurance people, or people with special grit and fortitude and resilience. And I found that's actually a learned skill.
Okay. Yeah. Very, very cool. So what was, so you read books, you took the course, you started, you just took action. You got on. Meetup is great, by the way. If anybody's listening to this that's not aware of that, I don't know if it's shifted a little bit in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think
it seems like it has.
Moved out of Facebook groups now. I think they started getting expensive, so people moved over to Facebook, is what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Because I've just, again, moved. So I'm in the same boat again, trying to meet new people.
Yeah, I was using Meetup for a while, and then kind of the whole pandemic thing, it just kind of really seemed to shift and never really got its traction again. And so Facebook group, let's discuss that. Some resources, because obviously you provide resources. Mm-hmm. There's other resources. So what are the best resources for somebody that's listening to this thinking like, I want to be more adventurous. I want to go have adventures. What are your top three, four resources for that?
First of all, I would give a little piece of advice that I probably should include on the other question. And that is to do something I learned once. It's called like plus one, whatever your comfort zone is, wherever your starting point is, just go just a little bit outside your comfort zone. Once you say, hey, that wasn't so bad, then you go just a little bit outside and just keep pushing yourself. And eventually you're going to have whatever your big audacious goal is, you're going to get there. But don't necessarily just leap, all right, I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro. Maybe the big thing to do is to climb the mountain in the next town over or the next state over, whatever it is. If you've never been out of the state, go to the next state. If you've never been out of the country, maybe go to an English-speaking country. You know, just challenge yourself to just do one little twitchy thing more than you did the last time. And okay. I think you get confidence also with training. And that's a thing I promote very heavily on my show is I push people to go outside their comfort zone, just that little plus one, and I push them to train so you have confidence. When I did that section hike on the AT, they nicknamed me Xena, like the warrior princess, because I had so overtrained. I could have done anything. I'll never be that fit as long as I live. I was scared to death. And so to compensate, I was an Amazon woman.
Okay. So based on what you just said, do you feel like you maybe should have taken your own advice and just went a plus one to work your way up to it? Because it kind of, what I heard was, man, I was like really kind of in my head about this and overtrained. And did that maybe get in the way? Did that make it more difficult? Or did it, I mean, obviously it worked for you. You're still doing it.
But over the 5-6 months that I trained before I even went to my first overnight backpacking. So I backpacked 2 nights prior to my June adventure with both my meetup group. So one was mm-hmm. just an overnight just to test it and see it. And then Grayson Highlands, beautiful place, would recommend. And then the other was a 2 or 3 night weekend with my friend Casey and his group. And I guess it probably would make sense. I didn't have that time. So,
yeah,
and I guess I did it from more of an educational, and I picked everybody's brains. I read every book and I said, I hiked every single weekend on these conditioning things. And then I was biking or walking or doing lifting weights or doing everything else during the week.
If you had done half the training that you did, would you still have had a successful 2-week hike?
Yes, no doubt. I was determined. Okay. And I went with 2 girlfriends, neither of which had time to... this is a funny story I can tell you. So with 2 girlfriends that did not train as well as they should have. And I had gotten on the trip with Casey. You don't know what you don't know. People were always treating their water. And I was like, you know, people all over the world drink their own water. I bet you I could save some weight because I was really into shaving the grams and all that. If I didn't have to treat my water, maybe I could teach myself to drink untreated water. So that weekend, everybody's treating their water. Now remember, you don't know what you don't know. I took my Steripen. I just kind of dabbed it in there. And man, did I get Giardia. Oh my God, I got so sick. I didn't know it was a parasite. I just thought it was something you could get used to. And Warren Doyle also, he brags that he never treats his water. And so I was stupid. Anyhow, and then so I had the antibiotics for that. This is 2 weeks before my big trip, and it goes away. But then it came back. There's some lived, some super ones lived, and so it came back with a vengeance. I've never been so sick in my life, and I lost 6 pounds in 2 days. And I was supposed to start my big adventure that weekend, but fortunately, they had not trained as well, so they were slow getting started that first week. And by that time, my body had recovered. But I could have done far less training. I just felt more comfortable being that strong, but no, stupid. So memo to everybody, treat your water.
It's a really good one. I've had that as well. And it is I'm not going to say it's a good weight loss strategy, but it is effective, maybe is the right word. Right. And, but it's instead of trying to lose 20 pounds by getting Giardia, maybe just train a little bit more so you can carry that extra 20 pounds around with you. It's So the reason I ask that is because I believe, and I know in my personal experiences, sometimes I get a little bit too much in my head. And I'm like, oh, I got to plan everything. I, you know, over analysis paralysis or whatever. It's spent so much time getting ready that, you know, I don't go. It's like, I spend so much time getting ready, I don't go. But then I also, on the other side of the spectrum, I see the value of preparation, because just showing up, not knowing anything with a book bag, you know, to hike 2 weeks, that could be an issue as well. So I'm curious, like, how in this particular area, how do people know whether it's too much, not enough? I don't know how you quantify that, but what do you think?
I would,
because I think it's important that people don't, I don't want anybody listening to you thinking, oh my gosh, I got to train for 6 months. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do so much that then they're just like, I'm not even going to do it.
Okay. There's two pieces of advice. Two pieces of advice I would give. Number one, I would refer them to my other podcast, the Adventure Travel Show podcast, where I break down the different skills that you need for adventure travel. And that includes things such as training. Also, I've done several episodes on the Active Travel Adventures podcast as well, where I talk to personal trainers about how to best prepare. And then if you don't have a circle of friends that can help assist you or where you feel confident, they do have online personal training coaches that are very reasonable. I can refer you to the one that I use. And
very cool.
Is that all right? Or
yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, tell us.
Okay, so I recommend Becky at Trailblazer Wellness. And if you tell her that we talked, that she will give you 10% off. But she will customize a program for you using the equipment you have at home, using the time that you have at home, so that you feel confident as best as you can to accomplish whatever it is that you're trying to do, whether it's hiking, biking, paddling, whatever it is, to get your body in shape for whatever the adventure you have planned. So that gives you that confidence in your back pocket.
Very cool. I'm curious, is this a conversation that's different for women as opposed to men? I mean, there's certain elements that are very much a lot of crossover. I know you've got a lot of, mm-hmm. of, you know, both listening to your shows and following your advice. And I think it's worth having a conversation about, you know, what is the difference for women? If you're speaking to an audience of women as opposed to an audience men, let's get real. What do we need to discuss?
The main thing I see between women and men doing something is women will worry more about their safety, generally speaking, in regards to being around a strange man, mm-hmm. or sometimes even being hurt. That's the fear of rape is the thing that women seem to be afraid of the most, because guys and gals can trip and sprain their ankle, and then they got to figure out how to get back to base camp. Guys, you know, everything else seems to be pretty much the same as far as the responses that I get outside of that. Aren't you scared to go by yourself? And again, I wouldn't recommend that people do that right away and always check, you know, I always like to ask the locals and I will do what the locals tell me. Even if I was like, I think I'll be all right. And I did that recently. And we talked about that last time we met, talked that because of locals advising me not to go to Medellin by myself as a solo female, I didn't go, even though that's where I wanted to go. And talking to you, like, oh, that's fine. I was like, oh, shoot, I should have done it. But I will err with the side of the locals.
Yeah, it is a tough thing. And I realize, you know, I believe anyway that men and women live in a different world. Everybody lives through their own perspective, whatever your perspective mm-hmm. is. And I think, yeah, and I'm happy that you brought that up because I think that's something that holds a lot of women back from doing adventure mm-hmm. stuff. And groups. I mean, what advice? Yeah. Listen to the locals, but I'm just curious, like, tell me a little bit more. Like, what are you going to say to these women that are like, I'm just really scared about it?
Then go on a guided tour. And I do that a lot of times because not only are you safer and you have somebody that knows the territory and has all that figured out, it's also easier logistically for me. So I very rarely will go into strange mountains that I've never been to before because I don't know what I'm going to come across there. And also that's always an up and back. Whereas if you go on a guided tour, like I'll give you the example of the Tongariro crossing in New Zealand, beautiful, you know, one of the world's greatest day hikes. You don't want to go there and back. It's too long. So you go with a group, you start, you get there. And at the end of the day, there's a van waiting for you, often with a cooler of beer or sodas for you. That's really a nice way to travel. And you have the safety in numbers. You have the safety of the guide, and you have the camaraderie of the other people on the adventure with you. And I've met friends from all over the world by going on these guided tours. And generally speaking, will do that.
That's very cool. I have actually spoken with a few different operators now that offer specifically women's adventures. That they only take groups of women. Have you had experience with that? What are your insights in that to anybody that might be listening?
I did one, and I did a rafting trip down the Middle Fork of the Salmon River as a women's only group. Even our rafting guides were women, which is pretty cool. Because that can be a pretty gnarly river. And I wasn't sure what the dynamics were going to be honest with you, because frankly, most of the people I end up going with are men and or couples, and that's a different dynamic.
And it is. That's why I'm asking.
We had a blast. You know, I was like, you know, sometimes women will have a reputation sometimes of being a little more competitive. Everybody was so supportive and helpful and encouraging, and that's a terrific way to go.
Yeah, I thought that might be. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit, because you're unique. You've traveled an awful lot. And yes, over the course of, when would you say you took a period of time where you're basically traveling full time, right?
Yes, in 2016. So I had the lag. So 2008 through 10, I traveled a lot. And that was with my late husband. Then he got sick right after I got back from that big backpacking trip. And so the next few years was dealing with his illness, his death, trying to, the business we had let kind of falter while he was sick. So just life was chaos from he got diagnosed the day after I got back from that backpacking trip until around 2016. I finally was coming out of the fog. I got upset with one of my tenants. I was the landlord at the time. And I just said, I'm going to book a trip to France for 6 weeks. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to get away, but I've had it. I don't want to live my life like this anymore. I'm not having any fun, and I'll just figure it out. And I did it. And I was like, that worked all right with the internet. And something broke, I could call somebody and they could do it. And I said, that's pretty sweet. And that led to, within a year, I was traveling 6 months out of the year while still working. And then at 2020, end of February 2020, I by accident bought a camper van. And right after the lockdown in April, I went on the road. And so I traveled most of COVID. And once Europe opened up, I went to Europe, and I was then traveling full time and sold my house, sold the business, and just got off the road just a few months ago. So almost halftime 2016 through 2019, and then full-time 2020 until recently.
Do you mind if I ask so losing your husband at that point in life, you had done some traveling and then you lost him. And I can't even imagine what that must be like. And I suspect that it shifted your perspective of life, your perspective of travel, adventure. So if you don't mind, I'd love to hear kind of what came out of that as far as you're talking to other people maybe that are waiting for retirement to travel. I guess it's where I'm going with this. Waiting for retirement. You know, they have this dream of spending this time with their partner traveling the world or by themselves, whatever. But shit happens. Life happens.
It does. My parents warned me so many times. They were very adventurous, and I don't know why I never made the connection, because they didn't do it until they retired. Fortunately, they had the body that they were able to do it. But they said most of their friends waited to do the things they wanted to do when they retired, and they had the money and the time, but they didn't have the body anymore. And so all their big dreams, whether it was just to walk the streets of Paris, they couldn't do it anymore. And so definitely the carpe diem, seize the day, because you don't know. I've had two friends in the last year have catastrophic accidents, that one may be a quadriplegic. He fell down the stairs and snapped his neck. The other one, and he just finished a Camino. He just finished a 500-mile walk, a couple of weeks before. The other one I met when she just finished Machu Picchu, and she got mauled by some pit bulls and lost a leg. So now she's regrouping, trying to figure out how to do everything again. So you don't know. Neither one of them had any idea this time last year that their whole lives are about to just go topsy-turvy on them. And it could be the illness or death of a spouse or partner. It could be some silly slip of the ankle. Who knows?
Yeah. Was your husband interested in travel? Did he travel with you those first two years? Or
He did. He was, to be frank, not my favorite travel partner because he wasn't very adventurous as far as food or activity. So he was somebody I would spend like a half a day and then I'd park him in a pub somewhere. I'd say, I'll see you later. And so I would do my own thing. If I want to travel with somebody specific, I usually go to my sister, Terry. She and I have been on like five or six adventures together. And she's gotten into adventure travel since the group I went to Nicaragua with. I invited her to join us the following year. We went to Costa Rica. Now she's got the bug. And that's the only way she travels now.
How do you test somebody? I remember when I was young, my father used to tell, we were into adventure stuff. We'd be up, you know, climbing, caving, doing all the stuff, camping. And he used to tell me, Jason, when you choose a partner, a life partner, before you decide on anybody, you should take them camping for a week or take them caving or take them exploring because you'll see their true self will come through. Not necessarily in a bad way. If people don't like to go camping, that's fine. I get it. But like, how do you test a travel partner? If someone reaches out to you and says, Kit, I see you're going somewhere. I want to go with you. Like, what are you looking for? How do you figure that out?
Your father gave you excellent advice. And I think that adventure travel is a good way to test that. Maybe just do a smaller mini of whatever it is, because you will find out if they're high maintenance. If there are whiners, because I led the only trip I've ever led, although I'm thinking about another Camino, the Costa Rica Camino last year. It's a brand new long distance trail from the Caribbean to the Pacific. And I had a rule that they had to agree to, a one whine rule, that they could tell us their problem one time, but that's all we want to hear about. We want to know they have a problem, but we don't want to hear it. And everybody abided by it. And it was great because you don't want to go with somebody that's going to complain. I'll give you a great example of why I love Terry. We went to Peru for a month last year, and we did the Machu Picchu, and then I kind of outlined what we were going to do, and I wanted to go see the salt flats in Bolivia. And the company I was getting the transport with, it made it look like you could get to La Paz, go to the salt flats for a day, and then come back. But no, it's 8 hours each way. So we end up spending three nights in a row sleeping on a bus to go see the salt flats because she had to get back. She never even said boo. That's the kind of person you want to travel with. I mean, I totally messed up. Totally, totally. And she's like, well, whatever. You know, that's who I want to travel with.
I remember there have been a few times in my life where I met somebody, you know, maybe romantic, but not necessarily that it's just like, okay, let's go have an adventure. And you don't really know them that well. But I'll tell you, by the end of sometimes 3 days, depending on what you're doing, you really know that person. And it's like, okay, yeah, we're aligned. I'd like to travel with this person again. Or, oh my gosh, because of just my personality, I probably never talk to them again. Because if they don't want to go have an adventure, I feel like I don't have anything in common with them typically. But it's, yeah, it's, and part of why I ask is because so many people that are thinking about getting into this, I see them in social media, you know, oh, I'm looking for a travel partner. I want to go here. I want to go there. Who can I? And frankly, I always get a little nervous when I read those posts. I'm like, man, that seems so risky to just like pick up and go share a place in, you know, in Nicaragua together for 2 weeks. It's like, but, you know, I guess.
However, if they've already been adventurous and done fun things, like adventures like we're talking about, then they've been pre-vetted because you get sifted out pretty quickly if you're the high maintenance kind. And yeah. I'll give you an example. So I love my listeners, most of which I've never met, although I have emails back and forth. But I was like, hey, I'm going to be going to, I was going to do the hike in the Dolomites, go on a bike and boat in Croatia. And I was like, well, these are postponed trips from COVID. I was going to combine those. I was like, Slovenia's right in the middle. So I think I'll go to Slovenia in between and just work my way down to the boat. And so I said, hey, if anybody wants to go. And so this gal said, I'll go with you. Never met her until Ljubljana. And in fact, we have this photo because everybody's like, are you crazy? I was like, you know, Mr. MasterCard can actually solve any problem. It may not be fun or it could be expensive that we just go our own ways. And you take the, we did a self-guided tour of Slovenia. It's fantastic, but people are like, you're crazy. So we posed with a big butcher knife, like we were doing the ee out of Psycho and sent it to all of our friends, both of us holding the knife over the other one, exclaiming how they're about to die. And they're like, and it worked out fine. In fact, she went to Costa Rica with me last year. And yeah, so she was a big hiker. And it worked out fine. Anybody that's listening to my show that's done anything is fine.
I think you're right, especially because they can listen to your show. So they can vet it a little bit as well. Like, okay, is Kit somebody I think that I would align with? And if you don't have that ability, those recorded interviews, those things, I'm imagining like a Zoom call or something with a potential travel buddy, your partner. It's like, let's spend, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes on a Zoom call. And because I've never traveled with you, I don't know, would you advise that? And if so, like, what are your top three or four questions you would ask somebody like to quickly? Because when we've had experiences, we tend to look for flags. We kind of know, like, I would ask people what they want to eat. I would ask them what they like to eat. Honestly, that'd probably be my first question, because I feel like I learned so much about somebody sometimes when they, you know, in that regard. But I don't know. What's your experience?
Well, I'll use the trip with Sharon as an example, because, you know, we weren't, even though we were on a self-guided tour, we had an itinerary. Today, we're going to be biking such and such. Tomorrow, we might be doing whatever. We were sharing a hotel, but we didn't necessarily have to share every meal together. We didn't. So. And we often we didn't, you know, we would, you know, if she wanted to walk around the lake and I wanted to go, we still had the bike. I still wanted to bike ride some more, whatever the case may be. I don't know. And like I said, I tend to be probably more bold than most on something like that. I would just leave. You know, what's the worst that's going to happen? You get a funny story out of it.
You're right. Yeah, no, you're right. I did meet somebody at one point that we had talked about doing some traveling together, and she told me about her trip to Egypt and how that she was there for 2 weeks. And as all she ate were potato chips out of a bag and Coca-Cola for 2 weeks. Yeah. I thought, cause I really enjoy food, but big part of what I enjoy about the food is sharing the food. Cause I see it as a real social thing. I'm like, I'm not sure. I mean, she's a great person. We've done some stuff together. It's a lot of fun, but there's definitely some differences in the way people travel. So,
anyway, I love good food, but you know, I would just do my own thing. You know, you eat your chips. I'm going to go there and I don't know. I can strike up a conversation with anybody. So it wouldn't be long. I'll be talking to somebody. So.
That is true. I see that in you. I'm going to ask you the dreaded question, just to see how you answer it. Where's your favorite place? Where's the favorite place you've been? I know you've been asked this probably 1,000 times, and just curious how you answer it.
I have an answer for you. I used to call my New Zealand, favorite place is a little harder than favorite trip. My favorite trip used to be my month in New Zealand, and it's still like, it can't be more epic than that trip. But last year, around this time, a little close to about a year ago, I went to Antarctica via the Falkland Islands and the South Georgia Islands. And that was so magical, between the animals and the landscape and the people on the expedition and just getting out kayaking around penguins and icebergs. I mean, how cool is that? And hiking on the Trail of Shackelford. I mean, just it was just mind-blowing. And the people that went there, you know, it's very hard to get to. It can be very expensive to get there. So I was self-selected too, to be just really interesting people that had done, they've done everything else, and what's left was in Antarctica. So it's just a really cool group of people.
That is cool. And yeah. And I guess we've already touched on, but that self-select thing, right? That, cause something like that, yeah, you're going to get interesting people that are open-minded, curious, which is what I love about adventure travel. I love just travel, and I can create adventures traveling however I travel. But when it comes to being with a group, I really kind of want it to be around adventure because it does attract those people. That an adventure could be anything, a cultural stay at a, you know, indigenous camp in northern Colombia, you know, to, you know, paragliding to whatever. But it's about that open-mindedness, that curiosity, that, like you said, ability to do that plus one, you know, mm-hmm. do what I'm comfortable with plus one. And generally you find that in groups. So I've always really, really enjoyed that. And okay, so where's the place? Magic wand. You can go anywhere in the world you want to go that you haven't, let's say you haven't been, because you already told me some of your favorites, but you could go anywhere that you have not already been for 2 weeks. Where do you go? Magic wand.
I would say if I had to pick one place I keep not making it to is I would like to do the Kumano Koto Trail in Japan.
Oh, okay. Why? I know nothing about it. So tell
Japan
me.
Fascinates me on so many different levels. It's just, I like going to cultures that are completely different. They're very homogenous. So unlike a lot of countries where it's a mishmash and people all look and dress the same and act the same, they have a very distinct culture. It's very neat and tidy and orderly. And the food, I understand from chefs, when they had to, if they had to decide they could only eat one cuisine for the rest of their life, virtually always pick Japanese. And I mm-hmm. thought that was very interesting. My girlfriend went there and I had interviewed her for the show, and she sent me a picture of this one dinner she had that had like 40 little individually beautifully decorated bites of things that she got for dinner. And it just was, it looked amazing. I just would like to see it for myself. And I would like to do that Kumano Koto, which is a sister trail to the Camino.
Okay. So specific to the trail, but also Japan, because you have not visited Japan.
Only the airport. What I'm hearing. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, for my the culture, son and the I... food and the adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. My son and I were coming back from, I guess we were flying out of Bangkok back to the States after I'd spent a couple months with him this summer. He was 16. He's 17 now. Amazing experience in Southeast Asia. And we had 12-hour layover in Tokyo. So we got there, left the airport, went, got on the train, basically fell asleep on the train. And it was a commuter train, fell asleep on the train and pretty much woke up fortunately in time to get off at the stop where we thought we might want to get off. Anyway, just walked around, went and had food, just kind of saw everything. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to come back. The food experience, but also just, yeah, it was just an interesting place. So we got a very, very short glimpse of Japan, but I can see why people want to go there. So very cool. So when are you going to do it? Let's make a decision, Kit. I'm going to hold you to this.
It might be spring of 2026. I'd love to, if I could time it with the cherry blossoms, that would be lovely. But also fall, I understand, is gorgeous too with the leaves. So it'd probably be very crowded with the cherry blossoms. I don't know, but it won't be this coming year, I don't think, but possibly.
That was very specific. Spring of 2027.
Next year is 24, 25. Spring of 25.
Oh, okay.
Is that what I said? Yeah.
I don't know. That's what I meant. When I edit this, I'll.
Yeah. That's what I meant to say. Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So when did you decide to start podcasting and why?
I decided from Nicaragua, I met Janie, who lived in Scotland. He was having a 40th birthday party in Scotland, a hiking party, and invited our whole group to go. And I was like, well, I want to go. How about can you party with Scots? And I was like, I can't justify a weekend. So what else can I do? And Jamie lived in Glasgow. The party was in Fort William. And I'm looking around, and Scotland's most popular long distance trail is called the West Highland Way. You can connect from the Kelvin Walkway all the way there. So I walked 100 miles to the birthday party. And wow. Discovered walking holidays then, where they move your luggage. I'm like, this is sweet. I love this way of travel. And I just, again, so between the Nicaragua and the West Highland, I was like, I didn't know you could travel like this. Other people must not know. And I became so fascinated by it and so enthralled by it that I was like, I'm going to spread the word. And I was a podcast addict at the time. So that was a natural vehicle to spread the word, because I didn't see a podcast out doing the kinds of things that regular people could do on an adventure. So I was like, it's out there, I'll just start one. And that's what I did. And that was about 6 years ago.
And it's great. And when I got the idea of, I was listening to a lot of podcasts and kind of felt like there weren't a lot of conversations like we're having. So I started looking around at the podcast, came across yours, and I was like, oh yeah, that's great. What you're doing is a little different than what I'm doing, but super, super fascinating. And the way you do it is great, because there's just so much variety. And like you said, inspiring, I guess, real people that aren't athletes to go do things. And you kind of personify a lot of your listeners, I suspect. I mean,
yeah, I am my target market, you know, and the bar set, I have to be able to do it. So it's never going to be Everest. I think the hardest thing we covered was Kilimanjaro, which I think I could do. I was worried, because I don't do altitude that well, that I might not have been able to. But in Peru, I handled the altitude fine. And so I could do it. I don't have necessarily the desire to do that. But like the Mont Blanc circuit, things like that, I cover. That's about as hard as we get on my show. So they're challenging. They're hard. But they can also be easy, too.
Yeah. Well, I just suspect you've inspired so many people to get up off the couch and go do something. Because like if I was doing your podcast, having the same conversations about the same places, it would not inspire the same result, because there's something different between you and I. Like you said, you are your target audience. And I think, you know, it's a maybe sometimes a little easier for guys to just pick up and go do stuff. They've got one less thing to worry about when they go do stuff. So I think it's great to see somebody like yourself doing something. It just makes it just a little bit easier, that little threshold to get across and go do something. I know you've met a lot of your podcast listeners on trips and led trips with them. I'm sure you have some stories of somebody that comes to mind that just like really transformational, life shifting type of thing, or not. I'm not going to put you on the spot. And if you don't, I'll edit this out, but
let me,
I'm curious.
Probably. I would say my Dolomites. So two listeners joined me on the Dolomites hike, and we were in a guided group tour, and both Noma and Peg was a hiker. She was formerly quite heavy, but had decided she did not want to live the rest of her life that way, and had lost the weight and was hiking, but she had terrible knee problems, and she willed herself to do the Dolomites, and I was very proud of her. And then Noma was just this teeny little thing. And I think she did some minor hiking in her neighborhood in Alabama, but you know, they don't have really big mountains there. And she's like, you know, they both listened to my podcast and like, well, if Kit can do it, I guess I can do it. And, you know, and so we met for the first time in Italy, and both of them were just amazing. And I was proud of them and inspired by them, because like I said, Noma's such a teeny little thing, and these were big mountains, and you know, that they were the inspiration for me, even though they might have got inspired to do the trip because of my show.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. It's one thing I like about this you know, adventure tourism, is you really get to see people have life shifting changes and awarenesses. I mean, I'm sure there's people that go do these adventures and then decide, well, it's not for me. They don't do it again.
But have you met one? I haven't. I've not.
I know.
Met one.
That's what
I haven't met a one, so I don't believe that's true.
There's got to be. I just like logically, I'm like, yeah, there's got to be. But I guess that's where I was going with this is the norm is, you know, it's that first one, just like the dominoes just start falling. And then it goes from, you know, a couple weeks on the Appalachian Trail to having a travel podcast, traveling the world and leading groups and hiking all over the place. And it's pretty cool. That's why I think it's so important to get, not to get people, I'm not manipulating people, but just to encourage people to go do something, you know, and maybe it's just go out and learn how to paddleboard on a lake in, you know, close by or something like that. Just start doing something. And oftentimes it really can be a huge, huge impact on your life.
I think that doing these things makes you feel better about yourself. It gives you self-confidence. It encourages you to keep trying. So I think it has a lot of benefits in your everyday life that that those skills that you learn by going on an adventure transfer into being a more confident, powerful person in your day-to-day living.
I agree completely. And I recently interviewed Tom Smith, vice president over in, at Intrepid. And we spoke a little bit about the loneliness issue, you know, going on in the world and how adventure travel can really be kind of a solution to that. Group travel, it doesn't even need to be, we can define adventure however we want to define adventure. Maybe getting up, you know, out of your house and going and doing anything is an adventure. But the travel really brings those connections together, I guess, where I'm trying to go with this. So go out and join the meetup or whatever, not necessarily to hike, not necessarily to get in shape, whatever. There's a lot of reasons we do things, but it's the connection that comes out of adventure travel and tourism that I think is the most valuable for me anyway. And so if you're sitting at home alone, that might be enough reason. If you're sitting at home alone and you don't like it, that might be enough reason to go out there and, you know, listen to your podcast, whatever, get inspired, go, you know, even if that's get on a bus and go to, where's that place in Missouri that a lot of people like to go?
Oh, that mall? No, that's not Missouri.
Branson.
Oh, Branson. Oh, yeah. That was a drive-through town for me. Sorry, Branson folks. That was the man. I was like, not my town.
No, and that's fine. But I'll tell you what, for some, like, my grandmother was often, you know, geez, I don't, you know, a lot of my friends are gone. I really like to go make some friends and stuff. And finally she went, you know, did a couple trips on the bus to Branson. And it was perfect for her. Beautiful for her. That was an adventure trip. And so it's anything, you know, you don't have to go hike a mountain. But
and there's something important to you were saying there as well. I think when you go on how we're typically defining adventure with these other people, whether they're strangers or friends, it's a very bonding experience and you tend to get very close very quickly. Yes. And so you develop friendships, and I've made lifelong friends from my adventures that I've gone on other adventures from them and met some of their friends who I've become friends with. And my friends are all meeting my other friends. And so it's, I call it like a tangled slinky. We're all getting together and we're meeting all these really cool people. And oh, I met Eva, the gal who lost her leg because one of my listeners knew I was going to be in Cusco doing lunch. She said, hey, I got a friend down there. Why don't you meet? We met for coffee and became friends. And so it's all these different connections you make.
It is. It's so cool. And I'm happy you described it the way you did, because if you really haven't done it, let's say you've just kind of done the normal thing your whole life, raise the kids, and there's that's valuable too. I have kids. And if you've never been on a trip like this, you don't really understand the dynamics. Just frankly, you don't. I don't know how you could. And as somebody that's led a lot of group trips and have been on a lot of group trips, it's amazing how you get a group of people, maybe you get 15, 12, 8, whatever. This group of people comes together. They don't know each other. Some of them have some common, maybe common friends, maybe common places they've been or whatever. But you might get the one person that shows up that's never really been anywhere. They're probably feeling a little overwhelmed. Oh, I'm new to this. I don't know what to bring, whatever. And they show up. And by the end of the week, it's like everybody is so close. It's just so fun to watch that, you know, the hugs, like, you know, when it's time to say goodbye at the airport or wherever it is, the hugs and the exchanging of contact details and sharing all the photos. You just don't realize how quickly experiences bring people together. I mean, it's just a psychology thing. Shared experiences are one of the quickest ways to create bonds with people. It's why dating coaches will tell you to, you know, don't just go sit at a restaurant and have a conversation. You know, take your date, go do something, even if it's dancing or go ride up the tramway up to the top of the mountain or whatever. And so anyway, I'll get off my soapbox.
But that reminds me of on my New Zealand trip. One of the guys, Manny, was, first of all, our group was a little bit older than Manny. He was probably easily 20 years younger than us. And all the rest of us were in our 60s or nearabouts. very fit, but still. So he's this young guy, probably, well, I'm going to say maybe early 30s. So he's sitting in our little van that was taking us to our adventures with his earbuds in, just totally in his own world. And we're all, you know, chatting, and he was just not going to be real slow. By the end of that trip, he, no more earbuds. He was in, he, a complete personality change compared to the Manny that we met in the beginning. It was a riot.
It is. No, you're absolutely right. I, on a very small micro scale, I guess, I'm a balloon pilot. I had a hot air balloon ride business. And often it was kind of similar in the sense that people don't know what to expect. Most people that go for balloon ride have never been in a balloon. A lot of them have some apprehensions, nerves, whatever about it. And I always noticed that in the morning, well, it was early, so maybe they hadn't really, the coffee hadn't kicked in. But in the morning, you pick them up, and on the way out there, you'd always have, you know, one person just super quiet, not talking about anything. And no matter how much you try and pull them out, they're just, nope, I'm just not going to talk. And then you go have this experience. And then on the way back, it's like they are your best new friend. And they're, you're talking about family, where you used to live, where they worked, just all this stuff. And it's just that, it's that experience of just experiencing something new. It just opens people up. Most people, at least probably anybody that's listening to this podcast, I'm assuming it probably is probably a good fit. We covered a lot of things, and I know that you could do a ton more episodes. You've done a ton of episodes. We could probably do a ton of episodes together on a variety of related topics. And I'm curious, is there anything that I forgot to ask you, should have asked you, anything that you feel like our listeners here should hear before we wrap up?
I would say that if you've never done anything like an adventure like Jason and I are talking about, but you're intrigued, you want to do it, I would recommend actually going to my website, the activetraveladventures.com website, and use the search bar. So I spent a lot of time breaking it down by activity, by the month, by the continent, so that you can see, I mean, if you have no idea even what kinds of adventures we're talking about, you'll see right now over 150 different kinds of adventures all over the world and in the United States for all different levels of activity, to, that you can do it on the time frame that's available to you, and just poke around and pick out something that appeals to you and just commit and do it. And then listen to the training things, or like I said, I've got all the resources that I think you need to feel comfortable going out on an adventure, no matter what adventure means to you.
Very cool. Kid, is this more of an informational website, or do you have actual trips on there where somebody could actually take action and book a trip?
They don't book directly. I do work with affiliate tour companies that I recommend. And so I will send links to those tour companies, but I don't do the actual booking, although I am considering putting together a Camino trip for next year. But I, generally speaking, I don't want to be the one leading the groups. So I'll just, I do it. I do a travel planner for every adventure I cover on the show. And in that, it helps you see when's the best time to go, how difficult is the thing. And that's a free thing that anybody that gets my newsletter gets of every adventure that's, that we've covered. And that gives you a snapshot, printer friendly link. All the links are in there to figure out everything from your flights to the tour companies to any, if I have a promo code, a lot of my affiliates will give me an exclusive promo code. So they can, but it's more an informational website, so they can kind of cull down and figure out what it is they want to do and get more information about it. See pictures, see what the thing looks like when they get there, because my guests will send me photos so they can see.
Well, that's what's great. It's gather the information, and then it sounds like you can connect them with the right, you know, maybe potentially right tour operator. And if they're listening to this thinking, man, I really want to go on a trip with Kit, you mentioned you might do the El Camino. It's, I'm guessing that if they make sure they get on your mailing list, which probably involves entering in their email address somewhere on your website, then they'll hear about those things, those opportunities, if and when they present themselves. Is that
Yeah,
what I'm hearing is, am I hearing that right?
Or they could, you know, or they could just email kit@activetravelventures.com and just say, hey, keep me in the loop on that. But if they do get, I just do one email a month. I don't spam. I don't sell people's names. So it's just a one back and forth conversation. And often people write back and let me know what they did that month too. So it's I like that one-on-one, but I hate getting a gazillion emails. So I do my whole show. I have no ads because I hate ads. I don't sell names because I hate people spamming emailers. So it's my podcast. I can do it the way I want to. And that's how I choose to do it.
It's beautiful. And I mean, I get a lot of emails in my inbox, but I'll tell you what, if it's travel, adventure, travel related email talking about something exciting that happened or something new, I mean, I don't know, but I'm guessing the bounce rate for the adventure travel industry when it comes to email bounces, it has to be, I'm not going to say high, low, better than other industries. I mean, I've noticed very few people opt out of my emails because we're bringing something interesting, and something they're passionate about.
Yeah. When you compare email open rates to what's normal, mine are in the stratosphere compared to, because they know me. It's like getting an email from a friend because the people know me and it's good information.
Well, someone will sit and listen to, you know, one episode, multiple episodes. They've listened to you. They've created a connection with you. It makes sense, which is, you know, why I chose to do this as well, is to just create more connections. And I certainly appreciate the opportunity to connect with you today, Kit.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's been great.
All right. Well, let's do it again soon. I'll talk to you soon.
Anytime. Thanks, Jason.
I trust you enjoyed listening to the conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you're enjoying the Big World Made Small podcast, please take a moment to tell the algorithm by subscribing and posting a review so that others can benefit as well. I also invite you to take a quick trip over to bigworldmadesmall.com and join our private adventure travel community to receive new episode notifications, special access to our guest experts, and perhaps even some exclusive partner offers that we haven't discussed on the podcast. I'll publish another episode soon. Until then, keep exploring. It's the best way to make a big world feel just a bit smaller.